Previously on the Bus Inspectors podcast.
The shed in which our buses were parked had been subsumed into an enormous fire.
The many reasons why preservation can come to an end.
People get them into a brilliant state and then they become too old to look after them.
Keeping, storing, maintaining two vehicles was becoming an issue.
If you lose your premises or there's a major mechanical failure, the owner might just throw up their hands and say, we just can't sustain this any longer.
What can happen to treasured vehicles when situations change?
I decided to place an ad online to sell the VR.
Sit in it, have some food.
The downstairs is pretty much kitchen, griddle, fryers and all that, a serving hatch.
Some may well go for scrap. If there's nobody to take them over.
And in this episode,
owning a bus is not just about taking it to a rally on a Sunday afternoon.
What does it take to keep our heritage buses going?
The blood, the sweat, the tears.
You see the direct debit go out of your bank each month.
The good times, the bad times, the breakdowns.
Take it to the MOT and it breaks down on the way.
The skills needed to restore.
What they can do with metal is just amazing.
Maintain.
If it deteriorates, it's not impossible, but it's a very different skill.
And drive them.
One of our younger drivers volunteered to take it out on its last event, just for pure pleasure and challenge of driving a vehicle like this.
How did they get on?
Far better than I would have done.
And why heritage skills themselves need to be preserved.
There's a huge amount of skills that go into maintaining the buses from the last 100 years.
The needs of the vehicles don't change.
We've had to improvise and think outside the box.
The number of people that have got those traditional skills is diminishing.
It's like a species going extinct. I see in my job day to day the love that people have for these vehicles. I see that they really invoke strong feelings in people. People get very excited by them. They evoke strong memories, a strong sense of nostalgia and joy.
Sam Carter is a curator at the London Transport Museum, one of more than 100 collections across the UK where the public can enjoy buses and coaches from the past.
They are beautiful vehicles, these heritage buses, and they really do kind of improve the lives for the people that dedicate so much to them, the volunteers, the museum curators, the enthusiasts.
Preserving old buses can be a wonderful thing, but there's more to it than we might imagine.
Restoration is work done on a vehicle to restore it to its original or operational capacity. Obviously, ideally, when we're doing a restoration on a heritage vehicle, we try to use all of the parts that would have been original and contemporary to the time it was made. Some people would argue it can only be properly seen to be restored, a vehicle, if it's restored with parts that are kind of authentic for that vehicle.
And preservation isn't just about the vehicles themselves. Buses and coaches are part of our social history. They are all about people.
Perhaps a key element of preservation is that it's also, I think, linked to preserving the popularity of these collections, the kind of appeal of these collections for the public, for enthusiasts, for children especially is really important. And part of what we're talking about there is preserving the love for these vehicles, preserving the way that people feel about them. And I think it's only with that kind of will and that strength of feeling about vehicles that you can not only fund, but also get kind of general support for projects.
For many museums, collections, and private owners, it's vital that their heritage buses and coaches are maintained in an operational condition, meaning they can be used on the road and shared with people. This is how they inspire new interest and tell their stories to new generations.
It's obviously important for museums that don't have a permanent home, that have to be able to drive their vehicles in one way or another to events, to conventions, etc.
To keep the vehicles going into the future, they rely on knowledge and skills from the past.
Heritage skills are skills which are no longer included in training for current design or construction or maintenance of active road vehicles. They are skills for which no common job exists. That means that there's not people in the workforce who we can easily draw upon to fix our buses, to maintain our buses. the people that know these vehicles best are the people that worked with them professionally. We really value the skills of our volunteers who have and who have that experience, but they're not going to be around forever. And we need to find ways to make sure that those volunteers preserve their skills and knowledge, and that they kind of can pass on that knowledge to us as curators at a museum, but also to the next generation of volunteers.
The heritage skills required to maintain vintage buses and coaches are a reminder of how design and construction has changed and evolved.
We can look to just the materials that buses are made out of. Really, in the kind of 20th century, people who were building the interiors of buses were carpenters. The use of wood and wooden materials, not just for internal furnishings, obviously the floors of buses were wood, but also the kind of structure of some buses, you know, this is a hugely important skill. And a bus driving in London today, you'd be hard-pressed to find a single piece of wood on it. The way that buses were painted, that's definitely another example of a skill that has completely changed. Buses from the 20th century and the 19th century were painted properly by hand, and for a much broader range of reasons to do with preserving the vehicle and protecting the vehicle against the elements. Even the function of paint in buses has changed so much over the years.
As materials, designs, and practices evolve, so too do workplace skills. But as Sam knows from his work at the London Transport Museum, the needs of an old bus remain the same.
The vehicles don't change. The needs of the vehicles don't change. And in a way, although they keep breaking and springing leaks, they're not actually aging in the same way that we do or that our volunteers do. And so the potential for loss of volunteer knowledge and skills in quite a small window is very high.
Our ability to restore and maintain historic buses and coaches in the future depends on heritage skills. So too does our ability to drive them.
One skill that people don't talk about that often, because they're focused so much on the mechanics, is driving skills, of course. And that skill is so important to us at the museum because we're so keen to have all our vehicles be operational vehicles. And I think that's one example of a skill where the lineage to current driving skills is there, but it is quite a kind of complicated lineage to the extent that a modern bus driver would not be able to drive most of the buses in our collection. Certainly any from before the 1990s or 1980s would be a challenge.
What are the skills involved in driving a heritage bus?
My name is Gerard Butler, and I'm a member for the last 25 years of the Ribble Vehicle Preservation Trust. For much of that time, driving on the group's preserved vehicles of various types.
Gerard has been driving traditional buses and coaches since his student days, and even a little bit before.
After A-levels, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and I was always been interested in buses, so I actually went and joined Manchester Corporation as a conductor. I started in 66, started to learn to drive in 1968, which was very useful because when I did decide then it was time to restart my education, I had a PCV licence, which was very useful for earning extra cash in the holidays and at weekends.
There are names on his CV that will make enthusiasts weak at the knees.
Manchester Corporation, Lancashire United, Ribble Motor Services and the North Western. And certainly the variety of vehicles there was quite something.
The graduation from bus conductor to bus driver involved learning some very particular skills.
The starting point was what we call Leyland PD1s, and these were Leylands that had been built just after the war, and these had what they call crash gearboxes. They certainly took some mastering. It was not that easy to actually change gear like it would be in a car these days, even a manual car.
A crash gearbox is one in which the driver must carefully match the speeds of the engine and drive shaft in order to change gear. Driving a vehicle fitted with a crash box requires a sense of timing, of speed, and, some say, a musical ear.
These changing from gear to gear had to be do something what you'd call double declutch. You took the gear out, then into neutral, then into the next gear. You had to get the timing exactly right, otherwise changing gear was not going to happen.
Inside the box, cogs and shafts are constantly rotating. And if they are brought together at different speeds, well, this is where a crash box gets its name.
Changing down was interesting as well because it was the double clutch movement with an additional rev. And believe me, if you didn't get that change right, it wasn't going to happen. It took quite a long time. You could be, when you first started to learn to drive, at least 3-4 days before you were let out on the road, when you'd actually got something like the hang of driving one of these crash gearboxes.
Other types of bus transmission included the pre-select gearbox, where the driver would position a gear selector in advance of need, then use a pedal to engage the new gear. Those with skills in organisation and planning were rewarded. Semi-automatic and pneumatic gearboxes became common from the 1960s. Whilst easier to keep the bus moving, they required skills of their own if passengers were to be given a smooth ride. These driving skills are now to be cherished.
When I learnt to drive, they were the norm. That's the route that everybody went. People in the PCB industry these days, or for many years, have not been used to that type of old skill, traditional skill. Groups like ours are finding it more and more difficult to recruit people to drive our vehicles to events and what have you. Many people find it difficult. Others, frankly, don't want to do it because they prefer to drive reserve vehicles of a more modern era.
A loss of heritage driving skills has long been a fear. For many, it is now a reality.
It's not something round the corner. I think we're actually here. We're finding that as the older people, and I've got to include myself in that, give up driving, we haven't got the throughput of people with those very traditional driving skills. So we're finding that there are events, there's fewer and fewer of those vehicles from the 1930s, 40s, 50s. There are people, but not to the numbers that we really need to do what we really want to do in terms of taking our vehicles to the public for the public to ride on and enjoy.
Heritage skills in driving, maintenance and restoration are vital to the continued success of the 100 plus museums, collections and charities who look after the nation's historic buses. Back at the London Transport Museum, Curator Sam has been leading a project to explore ways to preserve heritage skills.
We have what we call the Sustaining Heritage Skills Project. It was funded with the National Lottery's Innovation Fund, and it specifically is funding heritage projects where you're trying to solve a specific issue in cultural heritage.
The project has been working collaboratively with heritage organisations around the UK. The research phase confirms that loss of heritage skills could be a fast-growing problem.
There are issues about knowledge, especially, that seem like ticking time bombs that are in danger of going off. Some of the problems were that heritage skills were quite difficult to find for many institutions, that heritage skills were possessed by people who were getting older, that there wasn't enough money to fund certain workshops or contractors in a stable way. I think the potential for that problem to become a very big problem very quickly is quite serious. With the most sensitivity and love in the world, this links to the age of many of the volunteers that are working with our collections. Many of them are in their 60s and 70s, if not 80s. We have volunteers at our museum who are in their 100s. For many of them, they will have less energy over the next 10 or 20 years. They will stop working with us, not because they want to stop working with us, but just because it becomes impossible for them to do so. And I think that is quite close, that kind of mass exodus of volunteers. We're running out of time to capture their skills and to pass them on.
There is a need for action. And Sam believes, for collaboration.
We're also trying to build slightly more of a sense of community and togetherness between institutions who have heritage road vehicle collections and contractors, volunteers, enthusiasts who work with, admire, love heritage road vehicle collections. So as part of our Heritage Skills project at the London Transport Museum, we've also hosted a number of Heritage Skills seminars.
The project has been going for 2 years now.
We invite people from across the country, from museums who are doing restoration work on their buses.
We need welding capabilities, structural sides, woodwork, flooring, painting.
People to come in to talk about their relationships with volunteers in particular has been a key strand of the seminars.
You can't fix it. Make it.
Heritage preservation from different heritage sectors. So we've had people in from maritime heritage, railway heritage, and obviously there's a lot of crossovers and analogies between these different heritage areas.
Bringing the heritage community more closely together could help.
One of our ideas for opening this up into more of a network was to create some databases. Honing this idea, we decided that we would have or test a directory of skilled heritage contractors and a database of upcoming vehicle restoration projects. What we've done over the last few months, over the last year or so, is we've gone out to heritage institutions and to heritage contractors, and we've spoken to them, we've surveyed them, we've asked them questions. What projects do you have coming up? Or for the skilled contractors, what skills do you have? What skills do you offer? And the idea being that this would, in the future, populate some form of database. The stage we're at now is that we have kind of collected some data. We found that museums and contractors haven't been as responsive as we might have hoped. That's been one of the issues with this test phase of the project.
Sharing knowledge appears to be key. It remains a concern for Sam.
So that's where my pessimism comes from, is a worry about sharing, is a worry about how much access people are going to be able to have in the future to knowledge and skills. That might seem like a strange thing to be worried about in this day and age, where you can say, oh, well, we have the internet, we have email, we can share knowledge instantly. But that's actually just the means of sharing information, and you have to have the will to share it before you can actually take advantage of those. So many institutions are doing such amazing work to record these skills, and so many volunteers at institutions, including at our institution, are producing a lot of resources to preserve these skills, and that's great. But I think the problem is that's all being done in-house. If we don't act to share knowledge between institutions, to identify specific contractors, specific experts who are skilled in certain heritage skills that are disappearing, if we don't identify those people soon and find a way to record their skills, we're going to end up losing those skills forever. That for me is a kind of fundamental loss that can't come back. You know, it's like a species going extinct. Once you've lost that skill, that's it.
You're listening to the Bus Inspectors podcast. Coming up, we'll hear about ways in which museums and industry are working together to keep the nation's vintage buses going.
The main person that worked on this was one of our trainee bodymakers, so it's been very beneficial for us, as well as the museum benefiting from restoring their vehicle.
And how apprenticeships are helping to keep heritage skills alive in the vintage car world.
They're being supported and they've become key members of staff.
The Bus Inspectors podcast is brought to you by the National Association of Road Transport Museums, a registered charity representing more than 100 UK-based museums. The National Association is currently working to list, score and grade the UK's 10,000 vintage buses.
The NARTM scheme helps to give us some sense of scale and proportion.
You can find out more about the project and why we're doing it throughout the series so far.
Looking at each of them, working out which ones most deserve to be in collections of the future is a really sensible thing to do.
Sam from the London Transport Museum agrees.
We are going to have to reassess our criteria for what makes a heritage bus special over the years, and necessarily buses are going to have to start doing more to stand out, to be worthy of conservation, to be worthy of preservation, because there's just going to be more of them. I think we have to be really realistic about which buses we need to prioritise. we can't say we love preserving heritage buses, but only buses up to 1980. We have to start to realise that that's a heritage vehicle. Every bit as much as the first Routemaster is a heritage vehicle. Younger bus enthusiasts today are going to become enthusiastic for the same reason that older bus enthusiasts are passionate about buses, which is that they have memories linked to these vehicles. They have a sense of nostalgia.
Hear the rest of the series and follow the project at thebusinspectors.com. As we've heard, looking after the nation's vintage buses takes knowledge, skills, and patience.
We've had to do various bits of body work.
Panelling, shaping.
Underneath the bloody thing, changing filters or changing alternators.
Do some of the structural work underneath.
Strip down, rebuild an engine.
Years and years of hard grafting. You just got to do little bits as you go along, really.
The dedication of private owners, museum curators, and volunteers helps to keep the buses alive.
Some of it you can do yourself and some of it you can't do yourself.
But could industry have a part to play in taking our transport past into the future?
You know, I've been in the industry now 16 years and I think when I first started, there wasn't as much openness for preservation societies or museums to be in commercial workshops for one reason or another. I think they were seen as a bit of a nuisance. Over the years, I think that's definitely improved. And I think that's through change of mindset.
Jack Abbott is the engineering director for Stagecoach Yorkshire, part of the UK's largest bus and coach group.
It's important for us as an industry to make sure that we're keeping the traditional bus building, coach building tradition alive. An RTA now, you pretty much bolt on, bolt off what parts are damaged. Whereas with traditional coach building, especially on a project like this, we've had to improvise and think outside the box to get it back to original.
Jack and his team of apprentices and engineers have been working with the Museum of Transport in Greater Manchester to restore one of the museum's exhibits.
So this is an XGM Buses Metrobus operated in Greater Manchester during the 80s. This project's been quite good because we were set a clear objective by the museum, what they wanted the bus to be, and it was original. They helped us source original parts, so that was something that took a burden off us, if you like. And they also then advised where we could maybe flex that a little bit. So I think the appearance was the main thing we wanted to keep original.
Stagecoach have the facilities to carry out the restoration, but the knowledge of the museum has also been crucial.
Greater Manchester Museum, Transport Museum have been fantastic and provided a lot of images from when the vehicle was brand new and in service. So we've had a lot of reference to be able to work on because we don't have that knowledge in the workshops anymore or the history in the workshops to remember what the vehicle was quite like. So we've had a lot of evidence provided to us by the museum to help us along on that journey.
The result of the project will benefit the museum and future generations of visitors. But there are also great benefits for industry people and the continuation of skills.
For me, it's important that we keep vehicles like this alive and restore them to the form of glory for people to appreciate. Not only have we got the capacity, but it's been a very good exercise for us because some of our newer staff don't have the skill sets that our older employees do and would never develop them skill sets because the vehicles are made differently now in the modern era. The main person that worked on this was one of our trainee body makers. So he's learnt a lot of skills and developed some technical expertise now on traditional body making as well. So it's been very beneficial for us as well as the museum benefiting from restoring their vehicle. These had a problem of rusting during service, so we had to do a lot of work.
If you're keen to see the project in action, head to the Bus Inspectors YouTube channel, where Jack will take you on an exclusive behind-the-scenes tour at Chesterfield Depot.
Time and effort from our team here at Chesterfield to get back to original condition.
Jack believes there is real scope for today's bus industry to play a future role in preserving our heritage.
The more we can encourage modern apprentices or modern technicians to dedicate in a bit of time outside work perhaps, or collaboration with operators and workshops to spend a bit of time from the working week helping societies, then I think that's positive. What I try to do, and I know other people do as well who have sort of similar influence and ability, is if we're bringing a line of vehicles to end of life, then we will then look to donate parts and materials to preservation societies. So I think that's important as well, because there was a time where we would just skip reams of parts and manuals and literature and software and laptops, and you know, we would just say, well, we don't need it, see you later. But I think if we can be a bit more open-minded and offer them out to societies and groups, then that can definitely help that transition to maintaining a modern vehicle.
Also at Chesterfield Depot, there lives a reminder of Stagecoach Yorkshire's own heritage. Managing Director Matt Kitchen is very proud of it.
So we're looking at our Yorkshire Traction Tiger. So this was in service from 1935 through to 51. And then it was sold on, and it's had quite a varied life. It's been in a circus, it's lived on a farm, it's been a caravan. And then in, I think it was mid-1980s, Yorkshire Traction bought it back. And the apprentices at the time refurbished it and restored it into the condition we see now.
Another reminder of the valuable training heritage buses can provide, and also of how useful they can become once restored.
It's been out for a couple of bus launches with us, and we're just exploring what else we could use it for. To be honest, I think it'd make an excellent film prop, given its heritage and the era that it represents.
All this depends on the heritage skills required to actually drive the bus.
You have to get the timing exactly right, otherwise, not going to happen.
How many willing crash gearbox drivers does Matt have on his books?
It's a really interesting question. The drivers who are still with us didn't have the experience of driving vehicles like this. We've got volunteer drivers, and in fact, one of our younger drivers volunteered to take it out on its last event, just for the pure pleasure and challenge of driving a vehicle like this.
How did they get on?
Pretty good, actually, yeah. Far better than I would have done. When it does go out, it's a real head-turner. And, you know, you see it passing down the road and people cannot help but look. And so many people smile when they see it as well. It's fantastic.
The vintage bus world is far from alone in its need to preserve heritage skills. There are more than 400,000 classic cars in the UK. The skills needed to restore, maintain, and drive them include some familiar themes.
Machining, hand skills, timber work and trim work, composite work, chassis straightening, single-sided repair.
Kyra Hill is operations manager at Heritage Skills Academy.
Many, many years ago, I would have been the prime candidate for an apprenticeship, but there wasn't one available. And I started working for a restoration firm when I was in my early 20s. Thankfully, college apprenticeships came along. They weren't really fit for purpose for what we were looking as an employer. And then Heritage Skills started.
Heritage Skills Academy was founded in 2015 by John and Janice Pitchforth.
The main problem was that people didn't know that these opportunities existed.
Their mission? To ensure that the world's automotive engineering heritage is maintained and the skills are preserved for future generations of engineers and enthusiasts.
And I know Janice had a really rough time at the beginning because so many people had lost faith in young people. Oh, they're always looking at their phones, or always they're always on their computers, or they're a waste of time, apprenticeships. And actually, it's quite the opposite. We meet hundreds of young people that are so invested in this whole process and are real assets to their employers.
The Academy brings together those with skills, knowledge, and enthusiasm.
We're quite a diverse bunch. It's an absolutely brilliant team to be a part of. My colleagues have backgrounds in apprenticeship training. Some of the tutors are ex-REMI. Myself, I was an employer of apprentices that trained here. My colleague Ricky is a specialist in historic bicycles. We really are quite a varied bunch.
Between 75 and 80 apprentices are recruited each year, and Heritage Skills Academy has found there is no shortage of people who want to be trained.
We have a huge amount of applicants. We ideally will take on 5 mechanical and 2 coach building cohorts a year, of which there are 12 apprentices in each. A lot of our applicants will come via the employers themselves. We offer a recruitment service where if you're an employer, you could say, can you help me find an apprentice? So we would shortlist candidates for them. Equally, we meet lots of applicants at shows, or they come and find us themselves. So they really come from sort of all different avenues.
The apprenticeships are comprehensive.
The training that we complete here has to fulfil the standard and the qualification. But we rely heavily on the employer feedback to help just shape the programme, because it needs to meet requirements, really, for the employers. Otherwise, it won't work. We like to train our apprentices in locations that they find inspiring and also places where they will have the opportunity to meet different people, different businesses and different vehicles, really. Our coach building and trim programme is delivered from Brooklands Museum, and there's nowhere quite like that. The workshops at Brooklands are phenomenal. There's every piece of welding equipment and fabrication equipment you could possibly think of. And you're actually in the museum itself, which is really cool.
The apprenticeship scheme brings benefits all round. For preservation of skills and vehicles, for employers, and crucially, for the apprentices themselves.
We do this because we want to give them the best start in their working life, really. So we support them wholeheartedly. They're staying, many of them. In fact, most of them have stayed with their employers that have supported them through their apprenticeship. Many are mentoring new apprentices that are coming through. Many are workshop managers. We've just had some that have come back from Kenya on the East African Safari Rally. We've got others that are going to Goodwood, Monaco, Classic Le Mans. You know, they're being supported by their employers and they've become key members of staff. So hopefully it's set them up for life.
Could a similar apprenticeship scheme be sustained by the heritage bus world?
We're limited with our apprenticeship programme in the sense that to be able to train young people, they need to be employed. And I think what has happened in some other sectors is that predominantly a lot of the businesses are really small. Coach builders and fabricators, quite often you go into workshops, there might be just one guy in the corner doing it. And it might not be viable to take on a young person or employ them on a full-time basis, and therefore that's might maybe where it falls down. Even though we are doing what we can on the automotive side of things, I think skills will still be a problem. I think people do need to take a chance on young people, and no, they're not all buried in TikTok or whatever it is. I think also we need to share our knowledge. We really need to share it and we need to pass it on, because once it's gone, it's gone. And that is, it's quite a frightening reality.
There are many challenges ahead for those who restore, maintain and drive our historic vehicles. But the rewards too are many.
So we've got a couple of Austin 10s, which are beautiful. And we very kindly lent an Austin 7. That the owner is happy for the apprentices just to boot around. It's got a sort of a dog-legged gearbox, it's a crash box, it's small, it's loud, it is a bit awkward, and they can just go and burn it around the airfield for a day, and they come back and they've just got this whole new lease of life. It's so important. If they can't feel it or touch it or drive it, they don't understand it. So how can you get somebody to love it? Young people need to be able to feel and touch and experience the vehicles.
The Bus Inspectors podcast was presented and produced by me, David Shepherd. Our guests were Sam Carter, Gerard Butler, Jack Abbott, Matt Kitchen and Kyra Hill, with appearances from Katerina Morainen, Seb Amos, John Pitchforth, Leon Daniels, Lord Peter Hendy, James Pratt, Claire Fairbrother and Nobby.
Ow!
Our thanks go to the London Transport Museum, the Ribble Vehicle Preservation Trust, Stagecoach Yorkshire, and Heritage Skills Academy. Thanks too to all the museums and collections visited so far by the Bus Inspectors. The Bus Inspectors podcast was brought to you by the National Association of Road Transport Museums.